love must be a kind of blind love.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Here at Quark's, customer satisfaction is our primary concern.
I'd say we just found our way into a wormhole.
I'm Kira Norris.
Lieutenant Commander Worf, reporting for duty, sir.
You're the best crew any captain ever had. This may be the last time we're all together.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
It is quite simply, Commander. The journey you have always been destined to take.
Sensors are not functioning.
We've lost all contact with the space station.
What the hell is happening out there?
Shields up. Damage report.
Balance stations.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Listen to the prophets. A Deep Space Nine Two True Freaks presentation with Sean Engel and Andrew Layla.
And now with 100% more Paul Spataro.
Hello, lovely listeners, and welcome back to this, the greatest Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast appearing on the internet. Listen to the prophets. For those of you who haven't leapt on the express chain to Awesomeville that is our show, let me give you the rundown of what we're all about. We talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine, the much maligned but astoundingly astonishing entry in the Star Trek OVER, episode by episode in release order. Or mostly in release order, as we did Way of the Warrior on the first episode. But pay that no mind, as this week we continue our trek through the second season of the show with episode number 9, a little show entitled Second Sight. Thankfully, it has nothing to do with that movie with John Larroquette and Bronson Pinchot as a cop and a psychic.
That was real?
It was real. And I think I may have actually seen it. Not in the theater, but when it was showing on HBO or something, I'm pretty certain I remember it. It's
that guy from Perfect Strangers. It'll be a hit.
It's the guy from Perfect Strangers and the guy from Night Court. It'll be hilarious.
Well, their respective filmographies include Beverly Hills Cop and Stripes, so I'm good with them.
Well, you know, sometimes you hit the positive, and then sometimes you star in Second Sight.
Bronson Pinchot's in, not Pulp Fiction, True Romance?
Is he?
Possibly.
He's in one of them.
Was that, but that was a Tarantino-written one. That was, wasn't that Oliver Stone?
I think
yes, it was definitely not a Tarantino-directed film. It was written.
Okay. But regardless of...
Anyway, we're not a Bronson Pinchot podcast.
Maybe we'll get to that after all the other shows that we do. When we do our Perfect Strangers or whatever.
We are not...
After the Cliff de Young fan club show.
Yes, after we chronicle every song that hit the charts that Cliff de Young has written, then we'll get to Bronson Pinchot. So, look forward to that in...
Keep forward to it.
2072, okay. And by the way, I forgot to introduce all the people here. I'm Sean Engel, and I'm joined by my two very good co-hosts, Mr. Andrew Leyland.
Hello. Too busy laughing at the idea of a Pinchot podcast.
You know, someone has to do it.
Yeah, but not us.
Not us, definitely. And Mr. Paul Spataro. How's it going, gentlemen?
It's going well. How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
I take notice that, you know, it wasn't my two very good friends. It was like these two very good podcasters.
that have just showed up on my call.
I thought it was apparent that you were my friends. I had to sort of emphasize the fact that you're awesome podcasters as well. But, you know, if you want to take offense to it, Paul, sure.
Well, I think you should spend about the first 10 minutes of every show giving our superlatives.
Okay, well, you know,
he's
Paul,
a big pain in the ass.
Paul is a very nice dresser, and Andy has an excellent singing voice.
He didn't say lie.
I'm not lying. That's the God's honest truth. Everything that I say is absolutely factual.
Next, you're going to say my Scottish accent is indistinguishable from the real thing.
Well, maybe
let's later. Not go too far.
No. So I guess I might as well ask, since we do this every time, do we have any specific Star Trek news we want to tackle before we get into the show?
Simon Pegg has given some Star Wars news. Does that count?
Well, it's a star show, so sure. What does Simon Pegg have to say?
He says Daniel Craig's in The Force Awakens. I don't know whether I believe him.
Okay. Sure, I could buy that. You know, he hasn't said anything specific about what he's supposed to be playing.
He said he's supposed to be a stormtrooper.
You know,
it sounds plausible to me.
If he's gonna say that, we might as well just say everyone's going to be. Oh yeah, Kim Kardashian's gonna be a stormtrooper. Kanye West is gonna be one.
Outfit,
well, they'll just amplify the ass on it.
That's the moon.
You know, I think it sounds to me like Simon Pegg is just, you know, having some fun. I'm certain he's still in talks with J.J. Abrams because of the whole Star Trek connection that Bad Robot has to the film. But this is probably just one of his... Now, was this on Twitter? Or did he actually do an interview?
I just saw it as a news headline somewhere, you know, on Google or something. I didn't click on it or pursue it.
Hmm. You know, it sounds like one of those things where it's just Peg, you know, having a bit of fun, so...
Yeah.
You know, if that is the case, that'd be neat. If you know, because there's been cameos all left and right. I think we were talking before the show about, you know, Sam Jackson wanting to do a cameo, and he'd even take a stormtrooper role in the prequel series, and luckily he got a better part than that.
Mm.
So, you know...
The name's Cody. Commander Cody.
And, you know, we've also had, you know, in Star Trek shows, we've also had people turn in cameos. I remember in, Christian Slater wormed his way into Star Trek VI in a little scene in there. So it's not uncommon for big-name actors to show up in sci-fi franchise films. So it's plausible, I guess. Do you have any ideas on it, Paul? Do you have any thoughts about it?
I wouldn't put it past Simon Pegg to be totally full of it and just kind of trying to have fun. And if he is in it, it doesn't sound like it'll be any kind of meaty, substantial role anyway. So, honestly, it's an example of us just not having that much real news to talk about.
Yeah. I'm wondering, you know, if it were the case, you know, if it would coincide, because I know Daniel Craig is or has been filming Spectre, and if any of the scenes or locations for Spectre may have intersected with what they were doing at Star Wars, and it was just he happened to be available for the day, and they put him in a stormtrooper suit and had him stand around for a minute. Mm. That could be interesting, but yeah, this is all speculation on our part. The one thing I kind of wanted to tackle, and by the time this comes out, you know, there'll probably be someone else who's unfortunately passed along, but as of time of recording of this, there's been another unfortunately passing of a character actor who was in the original Star Trek, Grace Lee Whitney, who played Yeoman Rand in both the original series and in a couple of the original movies, unfortunately passed away. I can't remember what the cause was or whether they mentioned the cause, but I know she'd had a storied past, some problems with substance abuse prior to this, and but it is kind of sad that we're starting to lose even more of the original cast, and you know it's kind of a depressing thing to think about, you know, these people who were heroes of our time and of this original show, and that we're starting to lose more and more of them.
Yeah, it is. It's just exactly that. Just thinking about all these people going, you know, moving on, moving along home. And it's just kind of sad to think about that all these people from our childhood are just going away, and it, you know, just rest in peace, all of you, everyone that happens to. That's all I could say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think they're all in their 80s now. I think Grace Lee Whitney was 85. She was older than Shatner and Nimoy. So it is, yeah, it is quite sobering to think that some of them won't make it through the next 5 years. The ones that are left, which isn't many anymore.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we look at Shatner, and Shatner's still he's starting to Stanley it up. I mean, he's going to conventions and making himself present wherever he can. You know, we've got the next generation crew that are still going strong, but you look at most of the original crew actors, and there are very few of them who are really, you know, that unfortunately, you know, they're in the same sort of situation. They're nearing the end, and it's kind of disheartening. But
yeah,
just the way life is, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Very.
But going from something depressing into the episode, not saying that there's going to be much of a change. Do we want to go ahead and leapfrog from that?
I suppose we'd better talk about this one, don't we?
All right, then.
Sisko meets a mysterious woman.
Tell me all about yourself.
Who captures his heart.
I love you, Benjamin.
But where did she come from?
There is no record of anyone matching the description you gave me.
And what is she hiding?
I'm not reading any cellular structure.
Is she real?
Hiding answers, Dax.
What is the secret of her strange existence?
Commander, obviously you have mistaken me for someone else.
On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
This one was Second Sight.
If we just skipped over this one, would anybody mind?
I said at the beginning we're doing this in chronological order, so don't take my intro thing out of context. But you know, I'm trying to keep this a classy show here.
All right. I guess I'm not burying the lead here.
Not at all. Second Sight was the 9th episode of Season 2 of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. It aired on or about November 21st, 1993, and was written by Garrett O'Connell, Ira Stephen Bear, and Robert Hubert Wolf, with story credits going to Garrett O'Connell. It was directed by Alexander Singer and starred the main cast, as well as guest stars Sally Elise Richardson as Fennel / Nadell, and Richard Kiley as Gideon Sayatek. And the synopsis comes once again from the Star Trek Deep Space Nine Companion by Cherish Erdman and Paula M. Block. On the evening following the 4th anniversary of Jennifer Sisko's death, Benjamin Sisko takes a lonely late-night walk through the quiet promenade and encounters a beautiful alien woman. The woman, who introduces herself as Fenna, engages Sisko in a pleasant conversation, then, as he looks away for a second, disappears. The next morning, Sisko and Dax meet Gideon Sayatek, a boastful terraformer who has come upon the region to reignite the dead sun of Epsilon 119. Dax attempts to discuss details of Sayatek's mission with Sisko that night over dinner, but finds the commander strangely distracted. When Dax leaves, Sisko wanders over to the viewport where he met Fenna, and is delighted when she suddenly reappears. Fenna accepts Sisko's offer to show her around the station, and the two make plans to have a picnic together the next day. However, when Sisko begins to question her about herself, Fenna excuses herself abruptly and once again disappears. Perplexed, Sisko asks Odo to find Fenna, although he has very few clues to provide as to her whereabouts. A short time later, Dax approaches Sisko and asks him about the woman she saw with him the night before. But again, Sisko can provide few details. That evening, the senior staff is invited to dine with Sayatek aboard the USS Prometheus, where the professor bores them all with endless accounts of his accomplishments. At last, he introduces them to his wife, Nadell, a woman who looks exactly like Fenna, but who doesn't seem to recognize Sisko. Sisko tells Odo to call off the search for Fenna, since he knows she's a passenger aboard the Prometheus. But Odo discounts that as a possibility, as his records prove that no one besides Sayatek has left the ship since it is docked at the station. Confused, Sisko returns to his quarters and finds Fenna waiting for him. When he mentions her resemblance to Sayatek's wife, Nadell, it is obvious that she has no idea what he's talking about. Sisko continues to press her for answers, but Fenna says that she only came to the station to find someone, him. She kisses him, but when Sisko returns the kiss, Fenna disappears right before his eyes. Dax continues to prepare for a mission with Sayatek, and Sisko announces that he will accompany them, hoping that they will be able to unravel the Fenna mystery during the trip. As they head for Epsilon 119, Sayatek goes on and on and on and on about his exploits, including his first meetings with his future wife, Nadell, a Halonin. Later, Sisko goes to see Nadell, but she claims to be too ill for visitors. Arriving at his own quarters on the ship, Sisko finds Fenna waiting for him. Sisko immediately summons Dax, who brings in a tricorder to examine Fenna. The tricorder fails to read cellular structure or DNA patterns, reading only energy. Determined to get to the bottom of the situation, Sisko and Dax bring Fenna to Sayatek's quarters, where they find Nadell unconscious on the floor, and Sayatek beside himself with concern. To everyone's surprise, Sayatek knows Fenna, and is not happy to see her. Sayatek explains that Nadell is a psychoprojective telepath, and that Fenna is an illusion created by Nadell's unconscious mind, a condition that can occur in Halonans during periods of deep emotional distress. The same thing happened 3 years earlier, he admits, and it almost killed Nadell, just as it is killing her now. He admits that he probably is the cause of Nadell's condition, but since Halonans mate for life, she never will leave him, no matter how much she may wish to do so. Returning to Fenna, Sisko convinces her that she must return to Nadell. Otherwise, Nadell will die, and Fenna will be unable to exist without her. Fenna is reluctant, but Sisko convinces her that their love is just a dream. Nadell's dream. Even if Nadell will never remember the dream. As Fenna kisses Sisko goodbye, Dax summons him to the bridge. Sayatek has launched the shuttle pod designed to reignite the sun, with himself on board. Realizing that Sayatek intends to kill himself to free Nadell, Sisko contacts the shuttle pod and attempts to talk the professor out of it. But Sayatek refuses, intent on going out in a blaze of glory, just like that Bon Jovi song. His vessel explodes on impact, and the sun flares into a new life. Standing next to Sisko on the bridge, Fenna slowly fades away. Soon after, Nadell recovers, but has no memory of Fenna's experiences. She bids him goodbye to return to her homeworld, leaving only Sisko to remember the bittersweet experience for both himself and Fenna. Now, you probably won't hear it, but I stumbled over a lot of that because, yeah, this was not one of the better episodes of the season. I think it started out really well. The idea of Sisko and Jake sort of honoring the fourth anniversary of Sisko's wife's death at Wolf 359 and him meeting up with this new woman, this mysterious woman, possibly getting into a relationship, that was an interesting beginning to it. After that, it just kind of falls apart. And I don't have much to say about it. Who's next?
I'm not going to even agree with that. Honestly, the beginning with Jake and Sisko, yeah, I do agree. That was an interesting beginning to it. As far as the episode goes, though, it went downhill immediately from there. There wasn't even anything with meeting Fenna that made it interesting to me. I had to start this episode four separate times because it bored me so much that I lost interest and just couldn't keep watching and had to start it again and again and again just to get through it. I thought it wasn't horrible from the point of view that it couldn't be watched. It was horrible from the point of view that it was boring. I felt there was no chemistry between the romantic leads in the episode. I couldn't understand why either of them was attracted to the other as far as the way they were behaving.
Oh, I could see why Sisko would be attracted to her. I'm sorry. I think... I thought she was hot, but that's just me.
You know what? I did not. I honestly didn't. It's not even a matter of just trying to put down the episode. I thought the outfit they had her in was not flattering. It made her hips look extremely wide and made her look very, very short.
Nothing wrong with that.
I'm sorry. What was that?
Nothing wrong with wide hips. You know that means just. Sorry, I'm being misogynistic.
You're letting us into a little bit more of your personal life. Yes, sorry. We want to know about.
Yeah, that's for other shows.
That's for our sex conversation. Yeah, that's for our late night.
Yes, the late night with Listen to the Prophets. Yes. But sorry.
Stop. People will want us to do that.
Oh, right. You know, I'm certain Chris Mounts is going to get us about Boobgate on this one now, so here we go.
And I mean, I don't even mean it from a sexist point of view that, oh, you should dress her up sexy, but, you know, it's only, you know, human nature. Some outfits make you look better, some don't.
Okay.
And I guess, you know, that's true as men and women. I did not think that was a flattering outfit that they had her wearing every scene she was in.
Hmm.
I didn't find her particularly attractive. I thought her hair looked dopey as Fenner. I thought she looked more attractive as Nadell with the way she was made up. This whole, you know, I don't know, being coy and then disappearing. You know, I think Sisko's better than that. I don't think he would be attracted to that. I did not see the chemistry between these two. I didn't understand why he even gave a shit, other than you know, if he thought she was, you know, maybe a terrorist hiding on the on the station or something. Because, like I said, I just see him as being better than that. It didn't bring me in at all. I did kind of get a kick out of Richard Kiley's egomaniac acting. He's an actor. He's one of these character actors who's been in a million things, and it's hard to put your finger on where you know him from, but you know you've seen him many, many times in the past. And I thought he did okay with his part, but the whole story was pointless. It felt like a meaningless TNG episode to me.
Sorry,
Andy couldn't stay up through the episode or through the review.
Oh, it's good. Has it finished yet?
Yes, I finished. I meant the episode. Yes.
The father son stuff's nice, I suppose. Richard Kiley gives a great performance, although it's a bit one note, so they don't actually end up feeling any sympathy for him at the end. Although he commits suicide at the end, which is pretty much how I felt.
And Sisko really made no effort to prevent him.
Yeah, that was one of the things that kind of bugged me about it. You know, he's stolen a shuttlecraft. Well, he hasn't really stolen it, but he's appropriated the shuttlecraft and is piloting it himself. Sisko doesn't, you know, they say, oh, he's disabled the tractor beam. Did he disable the transporters as well? Fire a phaser at him and, you know, disable his shields and beam him off. You know,
did he disable Sisko's ability to care?
I think the episode disabled everyone's ability to care. You know, it's... I'm trying to look at some good things about the episode. There are. I think there were some... Go ahead.
The bits were... They had to go to dinner with him, and Kira was like, can we leave now? Because he probably wouldn't notice if we did. That was funny.
Yes. Yeah, the awkwardness that the ops crew had when they were having to deal with dinner with Sayatak, and just, you know, how, you know, it's nice that you see, you know, O'Brien and Kira just loathing every second of being this, but good old Bashir, he's always excited. Oh, well, I think he's fascinating. I'm so interested in what he, you know, just, you little suck up, Bashir. One of the things that I did notice in his little discussion of how he was going to reignite the sun, he mentioned that he was going to use proto matter to reignite the sun. And
that won't work.
Yeah, I was going to say if it's the same sort of proto matter that they used for the Genesis device, isn't that a big problem? And isn't that outlawed, or wasn't that originally outlawed by the Federation?
Well, it is 100 years later.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe he's got it to work by now.
You know,
or maybe it's sun forbidden.
Okay, well, yeah, maybe you can ignite suns with it. But, you know, eventually the sun will collapse in upon itself once again and, you know, age everyone who's on it or something, and, you know, make the worms giant slug things as well. Now.
I think we're going to struggle to get an hour out of this one.
Well... Yeah.
No, I don't think we're getting an hour of this, because there's not a lot to say about it.
There's not, no. I mean, for a Sisko romance episode, it falls flat on its face, because ultimately he's having a dalliance with a married woman, so instantly our sympathies aren't with him, whether she's happy in that marriage or not. Sayatek, they never really display another side to him other than raving egomaniac. And whilst Richard Kiley does an excellent job of playing raving egomaniac, it would have been nice to have some sympathy with him. They try and do that in the scene at the end where he breaks down a little bit and explain that every woman who's ever been with him is like ultimately realizes what an arsehole he is. but it's a little bit too little too late. And whilst him going out in a blaze of glory in a better episode would have been a provocative ending, here it's just like, you do get the impression Sisko's like, oh, he's dead, I can hit on his wife now.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, she doesn't even know him, so yeah, the memories that Fenna had, she has none of, so yeah, it's pointless for him to try and make time with her, because she doesn't really care who he is. So
no, so what we end up with is an episode where the ideas have basically all been done before. We've seen energy being creatures before. We've seen creatures that are conjured from dreams before. We've seen the doomed romance before. And because we're not focusing really on our characters, really, Sisko is essentially second fiddle to Kylie and his missus. We're not interested in the guest stars either. There are far more interesting people that we could be looking at on Deep Space Nine as guest stars than these guys. And ultimately, it's a damp squib of an episode that doesn't go anywhere, and doesn't go anywhere very, very boringly.
Agreed.
Yeah, I gotta go with you on that, too.
I was gonna, you know, since to try and stretch it out just a little bit longer, the dress worn by Fenna in the episode, a little bit of trivia, is the same dress worn by Antonia in Star Trek Generations. I got that from Memory Alpha. Not that we actually got to see Antonia except from a distance, so how they know it's the same dress is just, you know, wardrobe must have done it, but whatever.
So Antonia was short with huge hips also?
Sure, why not? Shatner ascended that. And what else? I guess the thing that I knew Richard Kiley from would have been he did the voiceover for the theme park ride in the original Jurassic Park. You know, when they're sitting in the little thing. Yeah, he was the one who was Mr. DNA.
Right, that's so pretty
good. No, he wasn't Mr. DNA.
No, he was the one. Narrator. He was the narrator, and Mr. DNA was, I don't know, someone else. But yeah, he was the
DNA
narrator.
DNA spoke like this.
Yeah, he had an Oklahoman accent, surprisingly.
The only other thing that struck out in this episode for me was they mentioned Kang from the original series episode, The Day of the Dead. And there's a Klingon poem, The Fall of Kang.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, in 10 or so episodes' time, we will find out that Kang didn't so much fall as just kind of tripped over and got help. It's fine, actually.
Well, maybe the translation from Klingon of Stumble of Kang translates to fall in English or Federation standard.
Or maybe it's Kang's great-grandfather,
that
who was also a warrior.
Well, and we've seen that before. Didn't we, when in Star Trek, referencing Star Trek VI again, wasn't Worf, who was played by Michael Dorn on that, actually named Worf? He wasn't. He had the same name as Worf in The Next Generation.
Yeah,
so
I think he was supposed to be a grandfather or something.
Yeah, so he was still of the House of Bogue, but he was also named Worf. So
yeah, see, maybe they don't do that thing over in Kling of having him be Kang the Third. Maybe he's just Kang.
That could be it. That's a good enough explanation.
Don't blame me, I voted for Kodos.
And look where that got you.
Yeah. Okay, well, do we want to give our... Let's peel it off like a Band-Aid and give our rating.
It's funny, just to hit on this a little bit before we rate it is, I watched this and I loathed it. And then I sat there and I says, you know, it would really be interesting if either Andy or Sean loved this episode, just to to kind of debate why we have a difference of opinion. That's one thing. We do walk into these episodes 9 times out of 10 without knowing what the other guys think.
Mm-hmm. We never discuss our opinions of them, you know, in specific prior to the show.
And even in general, we usually don't.
Yeah, we may say, oh, that was good. But it's never like, this was the best episode ever. You know, we never come upon this knowing that someone's going to like or dislike the show. So, yeah, it's interesting that we're going to have some commonality here. Okay, well, since I did the synopsis, I'll get it over with first. You know, looking at the rest of the spreadsheet and gauging this in comparison with a bunch of other shows, I'm just going to have to give it a 2. I mean, it's not... For me, it wasn't awful. It wasn't Move Along Home. It wasn't The Storyteller. Well, now looking at it, I gave The Storyteller a 2 as well. So it's marginally as good as The Storyteller, but that's not really saying all that much. Okay.
You have your spreadsheet in front of you, Sean?
Yes, I do.
So I don't have mine in front of me. What did I give the storyteller?
You gave the storyteller a 1.5.
I'm giving this 1.5.
All right, then.
I think this, much like the storyteller, it's not offensive in any of its content so much as it's just boring and pointless. You never feel like you're engaged by the episode. You never feel like you care about the characters in the episode. Even for that matter, the series regulars who you do care about, you don't care about for the purposes of this episode. Because I think the only one who you even have the slightest bit of sympathy for is Kira and her with Richard Kiley and his ego. That's the closest you have to being engaged by any of the characters. It's just a mindless, no action, no humor, really nothing going for an episode. And I think if it were a little bit more offensive, it would get a lower grade, but it might have actually been more interesting to watch.
Mm-hmm.
It was just boring. I think that's the cardinal sin of it. It was boring.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Wake Andy.
No, it's yeah, that's pretty much how I feel about it. I'd pretty much forgotten this one the minute that I stopped watching it and looking it up for a picture of it when we do the show notes or when Sean does the show notes. Again, I'd forgotten the title of it. That's how generally boring it was. It's not bad in the sense that it isn't badly written and it isn't badly acted. It's just very painfully boring.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very long 42 minutes.
Yeah, I don't think we've had any other shows written by this person, Garrett O'Connell, as of yet. I mean, I don't recall seeing his name in any of the other episodes. So if this is his first outing, maybe it's just a sort of rough beginning. But yeah, this, not very good.
I'm going to vary off you just for a moment, though, and say Avery Brooks and Sally Elise Richardson, I'm going to say not well acted. Because I think if it was well acted, then maybe we would have felt some chemistry between the characters. Maybe we would have been engaged by them at all. Now, they were handcuffed by a boring script for the two of them and clunky dialogue as far as romance goes. But I didn't think that their acting stepped up at all. They weren't given a lot to work with, I admit, but I don't think that they did anything to make me really give a shit about if they ever met each other again.
No, actually, no, I think you're right. I'm just thinking about it. Like, it's not badly acted in the sense that it's not over the top or anything, but yeah, Avery Brooks kind of sleepwalks through it thinking about it, doesn't he?
Yeah.
That's the way what it felt like to me. I think he was given a bad script, and he didn't bring his A game to it.
And you can tell, especially by the end, where he's just like, oh, you're going to kill yourself. No, don't do that. Oh, sorry.
No, hold me back. I think the only line that he delivered that I liked the delivery particularly was when Nadell asked him what Fenna was like, and he thinks about it for a second, he says, she was just like you. I thought that was a well-delivered line. Other than that, nothing.
Of course he didn't say he didn't finish up that statement was, you're as boring as hell. But, you know, sadly, they couldn't add that into the script.
I'll drop it right in.
Okay, go ahead.
No, let Paul finish.
I was going to say, I think they would have been much better served if they had a, if they had an actress. It's almost the Vax. The Vash problem.
Yeah.
You needed to have an actress in this role who was really going to be just compelling and pull you in and make the audience fall in love with her, because we're dealing with a character in Cisco who has gone 4 years without any romance in his life because he's been mourning his wife. And to think that this is what's going to pull him out of it, it's just not believable to me.
Yeah, well, I think we're going to see pretty soon a woman enter Cisco's life who's going to be far more interesting than this Fenna character. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, and she'll be descended from Richard Castle's boss.
Oh, there you go.
So, there you go.
First lady.
Yes. yeah, all right, 1.5. I was going to give it a 2, but Paul successfully convinced me that the acting wasn't quite as good as I thought it was.
Okay.
I'm sorry to have interrupted your rating.
No, you're all right. It's perfectly okay.
Now, I didn't see Morn anywhere, and I actually sat through this two times, just the second time looking in the background trying to find Morn. And I even checked Memory Alpha, and usually Memory Alpha credits when the character actor who plays Morn is there, and he wasn't there. So I'm going to assume that Morn was not in this episode.
I could not find him either. I was specifically looking for him because I had no quality episode to engage my mind.
So essentially you had nowhere else to go?
I got nowhere else to go! I got nothing else.
That would be correct. I got nothing.
All right. Well, it's not a move along home, but definitely not a stellar entry in the second season of Deep Space Nine.
It's not dumb enough or fun enough to be move along home.
That's true. You know, now looking back at it, Move Along Home was, for its awfulness, it was far more engaging than this. You know, for its...
See, sometimes bad is entertaining.
I can wholeheartedly get behind that because I'm a huge fan of Mystery Science Theater 3000, and if they haven't told me anything is that, yes, bad can sometimes be entertaining, so...
Yes, but I'm not going to bump up points on this for, oh, it was so bad it's good. That's not going to
happen. No, this wasn't bad, it was good.
No,
this was so bad it was worse.
Yes.
Yeah, this was just awful. At least Move Along Home was bad in a good way.
Yeah, Move Along Home you could make fun of. So it did, yeah. I'm not giving you more points for that, but at least, you know, there's something to engage your mind.
Yeah. Okay, well, do we want to go ahead and pick up some emails before we finish this up?
Incoming transmission.
All right, you want me to grab the first one?
Sure, go ahead.
It's from our buddy Gene Hendricks, host of the Hammer Strikes podcast, host of the Quantum Cast, host of Anime Freaks, and it's titled Duet or Paranoia and Self-Loathing in its Most Entertaining Form. Paul, Sean, and Andy. Now that's a good episode. This was a good twist on the mistaken identity trope. I had forgotten about the twist, and during my rewatch, I was thinking, can't we have one case of mistaken identity that actually is a case of mistaken identity? Well, this was, and I have to agree with all of you, that this is one of the best Star Trek episodes out of all the seasons of all the shows. The writing, the acting, the direction, everything about this episode was just top shelf. I also agree with Andy that this is just plain good science fiction. It takes a real-world event and makes it happen on another world, and in doing so, opens up the conversation for the wise. It also doesn't solve anything. There are no easy answers, I guess. Here, your answers moments in this episode. There are no easy here are your answers moments in this episode. Sorry about that, Gene. It raises a lot of questions, and we get very few answers, which is what sci-fi is supposed to do. It makes you think about a subject, even when the show isn't in front of you. Yes, the wrap-up probably shouldn't have happened the way it did, but I like Paul's Jack Ruby analogy, so that's what I'm going with. Gene. it's almost hard to comment on an email that just says, I agree with everything you say, and I loved it.
Well, and I think we all kind of... You know, even though you gave it like a half point lower, I think we all agreed that this was just a spectacular episode, and there really was very little, if anything, to criticize about it. So, you know, if we were to get an email where someone said, I didn't like this, that would be rather shocking.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm happy that Gene watched it and agrees with us, and his points are all well taken.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Thanks, Gene. Any email that has I agree with Andy in automatically goes to the top of my favorites.
There you go.
Yeah, see, I think differently.
That's just me. Yeah, but he also had I agree with Paul, so...
He did, and he also had Paul as the first name in the trio.
Yeah, well, I'm prepared to forgive him for that.
Well, You know, I have noticed that he does tend to mix the names around, so thank you.
I think he's landed on this as the permanent...
There is no top billing.
As we record this, Gene is sitting hungover right now with Chris Honeywell, Scott McGregor, and Chris Tyler.
I don't think it's just alcohol if he's with Chris Scott.
Sympathies to Gene. Other substances there. Yeah, I can see them all like in a hotel room, you know, sharing beds, spooning.
Spooning.
And when you open the door, just a big plume of smoke comes out.
If Chris is there, yeah.
I'll take the next email.
Go right ahead.
The synopsis. Timothy Elliott emailed in. Listen to the Prophets issue 18, episode 18, Joanne. Greetings, guys. Let me tell you how much I enjoyed Listen to the Prophets episode 18. I agree. Duet is a very powerful episode with some wonderful performances from Harris Yulin and Nana Visitor. The episode should be included in a list of the best of Star Trek, but it reminded me of a third season Next Gen episode, The Defector, by Ron Moore. Both stories deal with the presumed enemy using an alias. In The Defector, James Sloyan plays Admiral Jorik, a notorious Roman butcher. That should be Romulan, shouldn't it?
Yeah.
A notorious Romulan butcher who tries to defect to the Federation with classified information. In both stories, the antagonist uses deception to further their agenda and make amends for the government's actions. The Next Gen episode doesn't have the historical correlation that Duet does, but still is a powerful story with some nice acting. The death of both characters in the final act works to create sympathy and added drama. Love the show, can't wait for season 2. Cheers, Timothy Elliott. Yeah, The Defector is an absolutely brilliant episode of Next Gen from the third season, which is, I think, the best season of that show.
See, I'm going to have to go and rewatch that because it's been so long since I've got it all on Netflix, so I just need to sit down and watch through it, especially when Scott and Chris are covering it for Star Trek Monthly Monday, the Next Generation episode. But I don't remember this one, you know, so, and once I rewatched Duet, it clicked back into my head, and I immediately remember initially watching it and loving it. You know, maybe I'll get the same thing when I watch The Defector, but I would be hard pressed to say that it could be as good as Duet, but you know, maybe it could be.
I don't recall it being as good as Duet. I think it's just a similar storyline.
It is one of the better ones, though.
Yeah, we're not saying that it's bad, but you know, it's like comparing last time Avengers: Age of Ultron to Avengers. You know, they're both great movies, but one is just, you know, a little better. So
you might even get a difference of opinion as to which one of them is better.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what's fun about this sometimes. Well, and I just want to throw a little plug out there because by the time this airs, it probably will be available. Tim Elliott and Brian Hughes are starting a podcast now focusing on all things John Byrne.
Oh, cool.
So hats off to them. Best of luck. They're picking obviously a topic that they're passionate about, which is probably the first key to podcasting.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that they are not making it a chronological review of his work. They're just going to jump around as they see fit, which is probably an easier way to keep themselves engaged and enjoying it.
Yeah, because God forbid they'd be stuck covering Blood of the Demon for 18 episodes.
That would take a while to get to that, though. And are we going to call it on that, or do we want to do one more?
Yeah, let's go ahead and call it on that. We've got a couple more emails. Thank you guys for writing in. I know in the last episodes we were kind of short on email front, probably because we had Gene Hendricks on, so that essentially took away, you know, one of our main emailers, and we were forced to write or reread iTunes reviews. But, you know, I checked iTunes recently, and we haven't gotten another iTunes review. So if you'd like to review us in iTunes, please go to do that. We'd really appreciate it. A 5-star review would be great. Anything less, you don't have to put it on there. We want 5-star reviews, basically. But yeah, that does it for this episode. Thankfully, this is done and done with, so we don't have to ever look at this episode again. And we can move on to next time. What do we have, Andy?
Next time on an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets, it's the planet of the psoriasis people.
Oh, man, those guys need some oxy. big time.
Sight unseen, I think, can depend on everybody liking it at least as much as they like this one.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty safe bet.
All right, well, I guess that's it. Yeah, you know what we're going to be covering next time, and you know how much we're going to be just championing its awesomeness. In that we probably won't. Okay, bye everyone.
See you next week.
See you next week. Bye-bye.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
I've been infected by, I guess, the Professor Allen ways. and $5 for a comic seems unheard of.
Oh, buddy, it's worth it. Although, in that particular case, it's worth it.
Free comic book day, I did buy two Treasury editions.
What did you get?
I got I'm trying to remember now. I got the Defenders one with the Howard the Duck one with the Defenders.
All right.
And, oh God, what was the second one? I can't even remember offhand what the second one was, but the two of them combined in good condition, they were $20.
That's not bad. So that's good for treasuries.
Yeah, and I had to, I went and took advantage of free comic book day, so I felt the need to buy something.
Rather than just walking out with a big handful of free comics.
I don't feel that's right. I like, because it's the one thing that always stays with me is it's not free for the store owner.
he's paying
for these to get people to come in, and to just go and take the free stuff and leave just doesn't seem right to me.
You'd be surprised how many people actually go in there and do that who are lined up just to get the free comics and then they bugger off that they don't really care. You advertise something being free, and there will always be people who will show up to take advantage of that, sadly. So,
yeah. It always really irritates when you see articles on Bleeding Cool and stuff like that ilk of people turning over free comic book day comics on eBay for like $30.
Oh, that's insane.
And you're like, piss off.
Well, you know what? You got to kind of kick the guy in the ass who's spending $30 for it on eBay.
Yeah. I hope they don't sell them.
How did they do that? Did they go to a comic book store where like a creator was signing or something?
No, it was something. I can't even remember what the article was now. It's something that one of the free comic book day comics has ultimately played into something in a just released book that it wasn't hyped or mentioned or anything, and suddenly it skyrocketed in value, and I don't even remember which one it was. The Convergence one, I don't know. But so suddenly, because it was Free Comic Book Day and everyone snatched up free copies, and this has now retroactively been flagged as an important comic, it's just skyrocketed in value.
Yeah, see if it sustains that value for any period of time.
No, it won't. I mean, as soon
shame
as
the person that spent that money.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I keep coming back to. Well, you got to be an idiot to spend that kind of money on a brand new book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even like when something gets hot, like, you know, something unexpected.
Walking Dead. You know, Walking Dead, the first issue of Walking Dead, I will see that, you know, the original first issue of that, I will see that on eBay for hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, which is crazy in and of itself, but at least that's been expensive for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking more along the lines of the books that, like, you know, it came out yesterday and it was under-ordered because they, you know, they did keep XYZ event secret. And the guy who has it now is putting it up on eBay for $30 just to take advantage of that. And then some idiot is buying this book that came out yesterday for $30.
When you could probably get a second printing of it that'll eventually come out for nothing, for regular price.
We'll get it on Comixology for $1 a month from now.
Death Eater 3 or 4 was the most recent one of them, wasn't it? Because it was under-ordered, so they were hyping it up.
Mm.
And then most recently it was Batman 40. Because what happened, this may not have been with you guys in the States, but over here, the entire print run of the copy with the digital code was scrapped. Meaning that we only got the copies that didn't come with the digital code.
Uh-huh.
So they jacked up the price on Batman 40. Where I normally buy my comics from on eBay, there's just a shop. If there's anything I'm interested in, I'll just buy it. And he had it for $7.99 instead of the usual $2.99. Now, fortunately, yeah. I ordered Batman, and that was only because we didn't get the digital copied version, so there was an under-order on it. So they jacked up the price on it. And I don't think that's right.
So Marvel is not free, and DC is just more expensive.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But now
I'm kind of with Luke on that. Nothing is ever free.
Nothing's free, but now that everything's kind of moved up to $3.99 anyway, the Marvel books are still a better deal. If you want the digital code as well, which I do. I like having them, like I've said to Mike Bailey, just having them all on the Marvel app. And if you're sat in the doctor's surgery or something, waiting for your appointment, you can just download a comic and read it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so like I said, I get what Luke was saying. But to me, DC were charging me a dollar more for what Marvel were giving me for less, even though it was more than a regular paper copy. My big complaint with that is that the digital copies are more than the paper copies, which I just don't understand people paying for.
Really? So if you order a copy of, say, whatever, the new Daredevil, latest version of Daredevil, it's going to be higher priced if you order it through Comixology rather than
it's a higher price on Comixology or the Marvel app. In fact, there are different prices. This may only be us because of taxes and shit. There are different prices on Comixology than there are on the Marvel app.
Perplexed, Cisco asks Odo to find Venna, although he has few clues to provide as to where her son of a bitch. Sorry. The episode's so bad, I'm messing it up intentionally in my mind.